Now I put that card away in a drawer, and I never charge $1 more. Then one day in the mail, I got this bill. Typed on a card all full of holes, it said, do not staple, bend, or fold, was the astronomical figure of $3,200.42. When? There's been a mistake.
On this edition of On Your Money, certified financial planner Kevin McKinley will have a follow-up to Bank Transfer Day. We'll talk about whether we should tap into our retirement accounts for financial emergencies, and we'll also find out that there may still be some good deals for holiday shoppers. Those topics and your questions on this edition of On Your Money. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is now 9 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Tuesday, December the 6th. If you have a question for Kevin, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Kevin McKinley is a certified financial planner, managing member of McKinley Money, LLC, with offices in Madison and Eau Claire, and he joins us from our studios in Eau Claire. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning, Joy.
Hey, we just heard in state news that the Packer stock sale starts. In fact, it just started 10 minutes ago. We can buy shares in the Green Bay Packers for $250 each.
I think you should get in on this. A lot of people don't know this, but this is actually going to put a dome over Lambeau Field and protect people against the elements and the cold. I think it's about time, and I think it's the perfect time and place for it.
You're making that up, Kevin.
I am making that up. That would be sacrilege for many people in Packer Nation.
Well, I was talking to my brother about this. I said, I wonder if maybe I'll just do it. He said, how about if you buy mine? That's not permitted, is it? You can't sell if you already have them.
No, technically it's not permitted, and we covered this a few weeks ago, but it is, you do see them spring up on eBay. Basically, what you're doing is buying a piece of paper that says you're an owner, but you probably won't have your name on it. So, it's a very nice donation and support for an institution, an organization that has given people mostly pleasure over the last 75 years or however long they've been around, and especially this year, as they mentioned, it's an opportune time with defending the Super Bowl championship at 12-0.
Yeah, 12-0, baby. Yeah. So anyway, if we want to do that, it's really just a donation. It's not we should not expect to make any investment dollars on that.
It does get you on a mailing list, and you get a few voting rights and et cetera. But you know what I mean? It's to show how little of an actual donation it is. You don't get a tax deduction for it either.
Well, let's talk about Bank Transfer Day, which was last month. And based on the outcome of Bank Transfer Day, there's a new movement, a grassroots movement, Kevin, to transfer credit card balances to new providers. Tell us about that.
Well, it is called Balance Transfer Day, and it is an offshoot of Bank Transfer Day, when people ostensibly fed up with the new fees from many of the banks and the problems on Wall Street and the ostensible and implied complicity of many of these banks in the mortgage mess. Many people decided they wanted to move their money to a smaller bank or a credit union account. And this was mostly their savings and their checking. And in theory, they would get better service, have lower costs, and also, of course, a philosophical move. Just say, I don't want to support these institutions anymore. I'd like to move something more local, a little smaller, and a little more personal. Well, December 11th is Balance Transfer Day, where people will try to transfer their credit card balances to a provider at a smaller local community bank or credit union. It could be a different story for both the people transferring the money and the providers as well.
Why might it be a different story?
Well, this could really hit the savings institution where it hurts. The average credit card balance in America right now is almost $16,000 for people who do have balances, and the average interest rate is close to 13%. So that's an average annual interest expense of about $2,000 per year plus fees. So if a bunch of people were to pull that money out of the institution, it would, or the credit card balances rather, it would actually be a severe drop in the source of revenue for the bank or the credit union. However, it's going to be much harder to move that. You know, typically when you're just talking about moving your savings, not only is it just a matter of sliding assets from one account over to the other, but most institutions, large or small, don't make a lot of money on savings accounts. So you don't really hurt them that much. You can save yourself a lot of money by moving it right now on a credit card balance transfer and hurt the institution as well if you wish. But again, it's going to be a little tougher to do that.
Well, if you are interested in moving your credit card balance, where should you start?
You do want to make sure that your credit is in good shape first and foremost, because those people who have good credit will get the best deals. Go to annualcreditreport.com to check the raw credit data just to make sure there are no errors on there. And if you want to go one step further and pay a few bucks, you can go to myfico.com, M-Y-F-I-C-O.com, to get your FICO score. And then check with banks and credit unions in your area. You can go to findabetterbank.com or go to asmarterchoice.org to look for a credit union. And we will have all of these websites up at our website, onyourmoney.com, later on today.
And then how do you figure out where you want to transfer it?
Check in with the institution and see if they have some rates. You actually will find, you know, single-digit credit card interest rates. Again, you have to have very good credit to get this, but it doesn't hurt to ask initially. You want to watch out for fees and any teaser rates where these are lower rates to get you in, and then after you've had a 0% balance for 2 years, it can get jacked up to 24 or 29%. So ask about any provisions that might relate to that. Applying for new credit at the new institution will ding your credit score a very small amount. But if you can save 5 to 10% per year in interest charges over what you're paying right now, it's well worth the cost to do it. The institution will usually help you transfer balances from one card to the other. And then while you're doing this, be careful, because a lot of people are using this plastic to buy items during the holidays or to travel for it. So make sure that you're using the proper card in every single instance and you don't actually, you know, try to charge something against a closed account.
Any idea, Kevin, if Balance Transfer Day on December 11th is going to be, a big success?
I think it actually already is a success, because many of these institutions, it's not so much the quantity of money that's moving from one, you know, section of the financial business to another, but it's more so that the people are paying attention to this and they're understanding that they have rights, and if they're valued customers, they should be treated as such. Otherwise, they're going to take their business elsewhere.
Kevin McKinley is a certified financial planner, managing member of McKinley Money, LLC. If you have a question for him, we have an open line for you at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can also send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. And we will get to your calls and your emails in just a moment. Kevin, next week at this time, we will be doing a special pledge drive edition, end of the year pledge drive edition of On Your Money.
This is kind of, I like to consider it a bell ringer pledge drive, where you know how when you go in and out of just about any store right now, there's someone from the Salvation Army sitting there ringing the bell in the cold next to this red metal bucket. Well, you know, most people don't write out a check for $1,000 at the time, but they do drop a couple bucks in it. That's what we're going to be doing. Now, the whole show will be devoted to thanking people who have pledged not only in this hour, but during the whole year to On Your Money. But we'll also be giving some tips during the entire show under a series called More Money for Your Favorite Charity, Less for the IRS, how you can still give money to all the organizations for which you care, but reduce your tax bill in the process by giving the same amount of money. So this is our bell ringer show. If you just drop in a $5 or $10, you don't have to give a lot, but your appreciation will be noted. And then when you have a future question for On Your Money, we were changing this for 2012. Before, we would be much more likely to take questions if you included false praise for the show in itself, but especially me. You don't have to do that, but what you do have to do is say, yes, I did indeed pledge on the December 20th show, so please bump my question up to the top of the list.
All right, that sounds like a deal. It's our end of the year pledge drive that's coming up next Tuesday, and you can pledge ahead of time if you want at wpr.org. But Kevin McKinley will be here for a pledge drive edition, a bell ringer edition of On Your Money. It's only one day. This is just next Tuesday. One day, and that's it. Kevin McKinley is a certified financial planner. He is the managing member of McKinley Money, LLC, a registered investment advisor with offices in Eau Claire and Madison. Kevin does not intend to provide personalized investment advice through this broadcast and does not represent that the securities or services discussed are suitable for any investor. You should consult with your own financial advisor prior to making any investment decisions. And it's time for the On Your Money email bag, a loyal listener. That's how this listener identified him or herself. Asks, perhaps not a common question, but I value Kevin's opinion and information. I lent money to someone who has stopped repaying it. What kind of attorney should I contact to find out my options? I'm not a Grinch. I just want to recover more than 10% of the total amount. So there's some praise for you, Kevin, but this poor loyal listener lends money to someone who's not paying it back.
Yeah, that praise is really starting to ring false and hollow with me. Even so, I'll be glad next year to turn over a new leaf where people can just say, look, I've pledged to the show, so please answer my question. It's actually going to be a more common issue, not only in the future, but it is already in the past due to the tougher economy, tighter lending standards. It's going to be something that more people are going to be facing because they're either going to have helped out a friend or family member, or a friend or family member is going to be in trouble, and they're going to say, well, gee, I want to help, but I'm not really sure how to do it. So we can not only help the questioner here, but help her avoiding problems collecting the money in the future and provide some lessons for others as well.
And where should the listener start?
It depends on the amount. Wisconsin has a limit of $10,000 or lower that applies to filing for a claim in small claims court. She can do that herself, or she may want to hire an attorney. It's not going to be a whole lot more expensive for a relatively simple case. If she does do it herself or she wants to get some background, though, the Wisconsin Law Library has a great website with lots of information, but there's a link directly to a page that has a ton of different articles on small claims court. That's at wilawlibrary.gov. WILawlibrary.gov, but we'll put a direct link to the small claims page up at onyourmoney.com later on today.
What if the listener, though, wants to hire an attorney?
This might be a good idea, and especially since it sounds like, you know, this is no money is coming over, so all other means have been pursued. The State Bar of Wisconsin has a really neat website and phone number, legalexplorer.com, which not only answers a lot of questions about this and other legal issues, but if you call 800-362-9082 in Dane County at 608-257-4666. And again, we'll have all that information up at onyourmoney.com. You can actually get through to a legal assistant who will get to know more about your personal situation, whether it's small claims court or some other legal issue that you have, and then tell you not only if a lawyer can help you, but even provide a referral to a lawyer in your area who can help you more specifically with your problem.
So what lessons can we learn from our loyal listener's situation?
Well, first of all, if you are going to go through this, I'm not adverse to this. Especially if it's someone for whom you care and is in need and you want to help it out, help the person out. But you definitely want to get everything in writing so there's no murkiness in terms of what the details of it were, how much it was, when it was going to get paid, if there was going to be any interest charged at all. And also, you need to do that for both legal and tax reasons as well. You might want to see a CPA to see if anything that you're doing is going to run afoul of either the gift tax laws or the income tax laws. And finally, you probably don't want to lend the money to a friend or relative unless you don't expect to be paid back. Because if you lend it and then say, look, if I get anything back from this, I'll be pleasantly surprised, then you'll be pleasantly surprised if anything comes back, and you won't be disappointed if nothing comes back.
Good luck to our loyal listener. We will go to your phone calls in just a moment for Kevin McKinley, Certified Financial Planner. If you have a question for him, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
The best things in life are free, but you can give them to the birds and bees. I want money.
This is On Your Money. I'm Joy Cardine, along with financial planner Kevin McKinley. And if you have a question about money matters or personal finances for Kevin, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Coming up just a little bit later in the program, we will talk about whether we should tap into our retirement accounts when we are faced by financial emergencies. And we'll also find out that there could still be some good deals for holiday shoppers if you missed out on the Black Friday, Cyber Monday, Small Business Saturday weekend. Our first caller for Kevin is Jean in Manitowoc. Hello, Jean.
Good morning, Joy.
Morning.
I had a question in preparation for retirement in a couple of years. I'm over 59 and a half, so I can take money out of my 403B. And my question is this. My 403B is performing really badly, earning zip, essentially. And I have a Roth IRA at TD Ameritrade that I trade on that's doing much better. I'd like to take, while I'm still working, money out of my 403B and put it in a regular IRA to trade. And are there any tips or that Kevin has? Is there anything wrong about that kind of reasoning?
Well, first of all, Jean, the accounts to which you are referring, the Roth IRA, the 401k, those accounts are just jars. And any investment almost can be put inside of those jars. And so just because the jar that contains whatever asset you have as a 401k does not mean that the 401k or 403b is doing poorly. It's the asset within which is doing poorly. Okay, so you can do almost whatever you want with it. You can definitely move the money from the 403b and put it into your own self-directed account. What I'm actually more interested in here is this money that to which you are referring, is this important money to your retirement and financial security?
Well, it is, but I'm fortunate in that I have another retirement. I won't have to depend on that. It will be wonderful to have, and of course I'd like to see it grow, but I'll be able to retire on existing pension and Social Security.
Okay. So when you say trade, define that further for me. When you say
I'm not a day trader, okay. But I do try to stay informed, and the small investments that I've made in the trading Roth IRA are doing much better than the 403B is performing.
Okay. Well, first of all, congratulations. Second of all, do not confuse are doing and have done. Mm-hmm. Because something, investments generally don't, you know, they aren't objects in motion until they hit a brick wall, mm-hmm. and then they're not in motion anymore. The third thing is that I firmly believe that it's acceptable for people who are interested and diligent about pursuing information to get into their own investments and even manage it themselves. What I don't like or I worry about, especially in a person on the cusp of retirement, is you making some kind of mistake, not even from a knowledge standpoint, but more from an emotional and a discipline standpoint that, you know, a butterfly flaps her wings in grease and all of a sudden the Dow drops 3,000 points. And you do something that either is really reckless or you don't do anything at all, which then damages your long-term security. So if you can do this with a portion of your money that if it were to go to zero, you still wouldn't be affected very much in the way of financial security, I'm definitely okay with this. But investing has a very odd status when it comes to research and information. Most successful investors, especially ordinary average people, are not successful because of information, and they're not successful because of education. What makes them successful is discipline. Either the discipline to not spend all of their money, or to save a bunch of their money, or to not overload into investment accounts when things are doing really well, or pull it out when things are doing very poorly. So, and sometimes that discipline is noted in people who don't pay any attention at all to their investments. They stick with a plan and they say, you know what, the rest of this day-to-day movement is static. There are some studies out there, Gene, that have shown that the average stock right now is held for a matter of seconds, and that 70% of all trades on the stock market are done not by human being traders, day traders, but by computers that are co-located next to the New York Stock Exchange to get a better access to pennies of prices on it. So I would just be cautious about that. It's your money. You can do whatever you want with it. But I wouldn't do anything that would cause, if it were all to go to zero, if you have, let's say you have $500,000 and you were going to take $50,000 and put it in an account that you were managing yourself and doing a good job with it and making, decisions based on your own research. If you take $50,000 and it goes to zero, yeah, that's a lot of money, but you still have $450,000 left. So I would be cautious about that, and I would lock up some money into something like certificates of deposit or savings bonds that's not going to make you very much money, but it's not going to go anywhere in times of trouble.
And it does have to be a regular IRA, right? And I can still do that while I'm working.
You mean in terms of transferring it?
Yep.
Yeah, as long as the provider's documentation allows you to move it out. Sometimes they require a separation from service, but usually you can move that money out into an IRA, check with the HR people or the documentation provided when you sign up for the 403B. But yes, you usually can move that into an individual self-directed IRA, and there are plenty of reasons to do that. You can save money. You can open up yourself to a much wider range of investments. You can even make it safer. But yeah, if you're going to do that, just make sure you're doing it for the right reasons.
Gene, thank you very much for calling, and good luck. Dave in Madison is with us now. Hi, Dave.
Yeah, hi. I am calling about the shift the balance day, which I think is a great idea. Money has had such a corrosive effect on democracy. It's great to see democracy pushing back, people voting with their dollars. But from a practical standpoint, I wonder about opening new credit cards, abandoning others, and how that would affect your credit rating.
It will hurt it somewhat. It's not going to be a big one, and it's not going to last very long, Dave. What hurts is when you're applying for a new credit. But again, you might see, a few points of a drop in your score, and you might not see any at all. And that's why actually filling out the application and applying for the card is probably the last step in the process. You first want to make sure that your information is correct, that you have good credit. Then second of all, that there are good deals at the other institution that are going to be available to someone in your situation. And usually the personal banker, representative, or the teller, whoever, can tell you what you might qualify for. Then the last step is applying, seeing what you can get, and then making the actual transfer. And because you're probably going to be paying, hopefully, less interest, eventually that's going to save you money, which will then not only boost your score back up to where it once was before you applied, but get it even higher in the first place. So yeah, there's a little bit of a friction to your score in the few months that you're transitioning, but otherwise, no, it's not demonstrable.
And what about the old evil card? Do you close that out or just leave it hanging there? What do you do with it?
That's where you can actually hurt your score. Sometimes the credit score companies will look at a lot of unused credit and say, well, this person could charge this up at any given moment, and so they have a lot of unused credit relative to their income or their traditional spending. And that may actually hurt your score. So you probably want to close the old account, not only because it will help your score a little bit, but also because it will avoid any fees in the future. When you do close it, though, make sure that it goes on your credit report that it was closed at your request, rather than the institution closing it for you, because that can also have another small effect on your score.
Thank you, Dave. We're going to go now to Don in Madison. Hello, Don.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have kind of a financial difficulty that I was placed in. I went through a lengthy job loss and a divorce at the same time. Yeah. And unfortunately got myself into quite a bit of financial hock. And I'm now employed, but just struggling with, wages are down, et cetera. I'm just struggling, looking for ways to dig myself out of this financial hole.
And I'm sorry, Don, did you say you are now employed?
Yes, I am now employed.
Yeah. Boy, I'm sorry about that. Kevin, what do you think?
Well, I'm glad you called. You are definitely not alone. Excuse me, Don. There are thousands of people listening right now who are nodding their heads and saying, yes, that's me, or that was me, or that could be me. So I'm very glad that you called, and I'm glad you're kind of on your way back. You've got the first step. So are you saying that is the debt the biggest problem, or the lack of income, or is it a combination thereof?
I mean, my income's okay, but obviously cost of living is way up and things like that. I just accrued a massive amount of debt. A lot of it was through the divorce. I ended up, if it had our name or my name on it, the debt got attached to me, basically.
Okay. Well, and what kind of debt? Is it mortgage, credit card, car loan, student?
Pretty much no mortgage. She assumed that, but it's all credit card, and I mean there's some pretty hefty attorney's fees that are in there too that accrued. But I mean, you know, we're talking $50,000-$60,000 worth of debt.
Yeah. Other than in my 23-plus years of doing this, now other than medical issues and job loss, obviously, divorce is just a completely devastating thing to most people's finances, not only because of splitting everything up, but because of the legal fees that go on top of it. And it really requires a great deal of discipline and, quite frankly, good fortune and luck to get back on your feet. Have you contacted the credit card companies yet to see if they can negotiate some of the debt down for you?
I have attempted that, yes. It's just the vast amount, even the settlements. Yeah, they're willing to settle, but there's so much of it. It's still, in my opinion, unobtainable. I mean, it would take me 15 years to pay it down.
Sure. Have you seen an attorney? You've obviously spent a lot of money on attorneys for the divorce. Have you seen one about your own financial situation?
No, I have not.
Okay. And you had an attorney in the divorce, right?
Yes, I did.
Okay, what I would do is I would contact that attorney and say, hey, you know my situation better than most people. Do you or does anyone you know have an expertise, an attorney you know, who can help me get out from under this in some way, shape, or form other than declaring bankruptcy? Bankruptcy is obviously an option, but it should be and usually is the last option if you don't have any other assets to sell. And the other thing you and other people can do is there's a website called debtadvice.org, debtadvice.org, debtadvice.org. And that will provide you a link to some credit counselors as well who might be able to help you and give you some other steps on an individual basis. They have some offices around the country. They also have links to a phone number where you can do an online counseling. And it's fairly straightforward, and it's either free or fairly inexpensive. It's debtadvice.org. And again, we'll have that up at onyourmoney.com later on today. And good luck to you, Don.
Yes, Don. Thank you for calling, and I hope all works out. Kevin, you know, we get a steady stream of questions from people who want to know how they can get access to their retirement funds when they're in a financial emergency without paying taxes or penalties. Is that possible?
Yeah, and in light of Don's call and a lot of other people's concerns, it's a good time to address this. There are some smart ways to make a bad situation better. Now, I do not agree with taking money out of a retirement account because of, you know, sometimes people say, well, it's down or it's not doing well. I'm just going to take it all out and pay off my mortgage. That's typically not a prudent reason to cash out early from a retirement account. But not only is it a good idea to talk about it to help make sure you've got that safety net installed underneath you, but also I think a lot of people don't save money for retirement because they're worried that something will come up in the time between when they save the money and when they can get access to it that they'll need that money for it. So you're usually going to pay taxes on early dispersals from retirement accounts. There's no way to avoid that. But you're unlikely to be taxed very much because of the way the progressive tax system in the United States works. You also may be subject to a 10% penalty. But there are several ways that either IRAs or 401ks or both can be tapped. And yes, you may owe taxes on it, but you won't owe the penalty.
So let's talk about those times that are penalty-free for account withdrawals.
IRAs, 403bs, 401ks all can be accessed without a penalty after age 59 and a half. They can also be attached without a penalty for death or permanent disability of the owner. And also, usually you can get at that money penalty-free for paying for uncovered medical expenses if they exceed 7.5% of your adjusted gross income. So let's say your adjusted gross income is, let's just say it's $100,000, and you had $10,000 of medical expenses, then yes, you could use part of your retirement money penalty-free to help pay the amount that exceeds the 7.5% figure.
What about IRAs?
They're a little easier to get access to without the penalty. You can pull money out of an IRA, and again, it's still taxable, but there's no penalty if you're using it to pay for health insurance while you're unemployed. You can also use some of it to make a down payment if you qualify as a first-time home buyer. It can also be used penalty-free to pay for qualified higher education expenses for you or another family member. And again, you still might pay taxes on it, but there's no 10% penalty on the withdrawals.
What about people who need to withdraw money from their retirement accounts, but they don't meet any of these special exemptions?
If there's typically a hierarchy in the way people should go to get access to their money. First of all, if they can borrow from their at-work plan, like they can get a loan from their 401k, that's usually the best way to do it, as long as they understand that they may have to pay that back, especially if they lose their job. After that, you should look at Roth IRAs for the contribution portion, because if you've made a contribution to a Roth IRA in the past, you can pull the contribution portion back out at any time with no taxes or penalties whatsoever. Then you want to go to the IRA. Then you want to see if there's any hardship withdrawals you can take from your 401k. And again, you're probably going to get hit with a penalty and taxes on it. One way people around this time of the year can manage that is, let's say you needed to take $20,000 from this and you said, I'm going to get hit with penalties and taxes. You might want to take $10,000 out in 2011, and then after the first of the year, take the other $10,000 out. And again, because of the way the progressive tax structure works, you might end up paying a much lower tax bill overall on that withdrawal.
I'm Joy Cardine, along with certified financial planner Kevin McKinley. This is On Your Money, and our next caller is Jim in New Auburn. Hello, Jim.
Good morning, Joy and Kevin.
Morning.
Kevin, my question is relates to a government savings bond. I've decided to buy one, and I'm wondering what a prudent person does to protect the paper evidence of the ownership of that bond from loss by fire or theft.
Well, and that's the specifically pertinent issue for the next, it would be about 18 days, because after the first of the year, you will not be able to buy paper bonds in person. You will only be able to go online to treasurydirect.gov and buy the bonds electronically and to store them in an electronic account. So for better or for worse, this won't be a problem if you wait long enough. Now,
well, for that matter, I'm going to buy two of them, one by Treasury Direct and the other one through a bank, so that
I can get
two in this year.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, Jim, because that's a good point. You can only buy $10,000 of these bonds per person per year, and you can only buy $5,000 in person, as Jim said, and then another $5,000 online. After the first of the year, you can only get the $5,000 online. And Series I savings bonds, again, they pay 3.06% for 6 months. The rate changes every May and November, and the interest is exempt from state taxes. And they're super safe and fairly liquid, so they're a nice deal for small savers to accumulate that money. I would say a safe deposit box is a good way to do it. Even if you do lose the paper, Jim, or someone else does, it's a bit of a nightmare to track it down. But the Treasury Direct website does have a provision on there, a frequently asked question spot, where they say, what happens if I can't find the paper to bond? They will replace it. There's a small fee to do it. But typically it just involves making sure that you have the documentation of the number so you can track it. But usually they can track it by Social Security number as well. I would actually get all the purchase information, put it in a safe deposit box, and also if you can, put it with your other estate planning papers, like any will or trust or beneficiary documents you might have.
Very good. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Jim, for the call. We'll take more of your calls in just a moment. We actually will find out what kinds of holiday shopping deals might still be out there even after last weekend. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Kevin McKinley, certified financial planner, managing member of McKinley Money, LLC, is with us to talk with you on your money. This is the Ideas Network.
$3, $4. We got a year-end clearance, we got our white sale and a smoke-damaged furniture you can drive it away today. Act now, and receive as our gift.
Yeah, if you missed out on Black Friday, Small Business Saturday, and Cyber Monday, don't feel bad. Prices may be even lower in the coming days. And, Kevin, that's good because I didn't buy a thing the weekend before last.
No, you just go to browse during Black Friday, right? Just to go the aisles. And like I said last week, I go at that time right at midnight. That's when I go to make my returns.
Right.
Anything from the previous year's holiday purchases.
Yeah, just a window shop, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Professor Oren Etzioni from the University of Washington, he's the inventor of Faircast, which Microsoft purchased for $115 million. And it was a tool that travelers could use to predict if the flight they were looking at, the price of the flight was going to rise in the future or fall, and if they should buy it now or if they should wait. Well, he did a study, and he found that prices generally rise again a week before Christmas, but they drop during early December right now. So prices on items are actually cheaper now usually than they are during the Black Friday, Cyber Monday, Small Business Saturday period. He even built a website to predict individual product prices at decide.com. It will tell you if it's likely to be a price drop or there's a newer model coming on, and the site claims to be 77% accurate and provide an average of $54 in savings. Now, keep in mind, with just-in-time merchandising, the notion that the price may drop may be true, but the notion that the product will actually be there for you to purchase could be another story. So the price might go down, but you might not be able to buy it anyway.
Yeah, I mean, the reports were that there were, you know, big sales numbers on Black Friday and through that weekend. Does that mean that a lot of products can't be found anymore?
Probably not. It might be more hype than reality. Barry Ritholtz, who's a kind of a financial gadfly, wrote a column in the Washington Post, and he kind of debunked a lot of these numbers. He said they come out every single year, and they're always way higher. It's kind of like, remember when Brett Favre played for the Packers? Every single year, he had always either gained 20 pounds or lost 20 pounds, so he was going to be better every single year.
Right.
Same thing with the retail numbers. They could be subject to inflation. These are just estimates, and it could be compression. A lot of people might have done all of their buying right during that big weekend and might not be doing any more buying whatsoever. And even the aforementioned Professor Etzioni found that a lot of the sales of actual items during the big weekend are really cheap goods at a very low price. And these are, you know, the knockoffs or things that are just basically almost given away to help drive interest in shoppers.
So how much longer can we wait until it's too late to get some deals online?
The online purchases, if you want them delivered before December 25th, sooner, of course, is better than later. But 2,000 online retailers have coordinated one more day of promotion in Free Shipping Day. On December 16th at freeshippingday.com, you can go to find lots of different deals from all these different companies. And they promise if you order on December 16th, your item will get there by the 24th.
I did not know that. That's good to know. And going online can save some time and hassle and money.
Yeah, I'm a huge proponent of shopping online. Amazon.com loves me because I end up buying just about everything there. And part of it is a lot of people agree with me. Consumer Reports did a survey and said, what do you most dread about the holidays? And 68% of adults said they dread the crowds and the long lines at the store. And online shopping obviously makes that much easier to avoid. However, it's a moral and ethical and philosophical decision to buy something online, because if you buy local, and this is true generally even if you buy at the big box stores like Target or Best Buy or Shopko or Kohl's, those stores pay sales taxes. You pay sales taxes that go to the community. They pay property taxes generally. They pay wages and benefits to their employees that stay in their community. So, you know, if you're pressed for time and you want the best deal, sometimes online is the best way. But if you can, please buy local and also pay cash, because the smaller the merchant, the more likely is that cash really helps that merchant out rather than swiping a debit card or using a credit card.
Yep. And I'm planning on buying local, but I am looking at that that Kindle Fire that you were talking about a week or so ago, too. And usually, though, that the only place you can get those is Amazon, right?
That's right. Mm-hmm. And did you get my name in the Wisconsin Public Radio holiday secret?
It's a secret.
Santa,
it's a secret.
Drawing?
Okay. Oh, here, this is not a secret, though, Kevin. I don't even know if this is something new. Wisconsin Public Radio is supported in part by Amazon.com. A portion of all purchases on Amazon.com that begin with a search on our website, WPR.org/shop, will benefit Wisconsin Public Radio. So that's cool.
It's good to know, and I'm glad you told me, because based on my family's purchases over the past couple of years, I can build you a new building just with what Amazon's going to kick back to you.
Yeah, brand new. So yeah, if you're planning on doing some online purchases through Amazon or the NPR shop, there's an online NPR shop, go to WPR.org/shop, and a portion of your online purchases will benefit your favorite radio station, Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley, and we'll get to more of your calls in just a moment. 1-800-642-1234 if you have a question for Kevin, or you can send us an email, onyourmoney@WPR.org. Our next caller is Don in West Salem. Hi, Don.
Hi. How are you today?
Very good. How are you?
Alive and kicking.
That's good.
There you go. I had a couple questions on reverse mortgages. Guess what the pros and cons would be on it, the age that you can look into it, and how it would affect, say, if you wanted to put a member of your family on the mortgage. So if and when we pass on, they'd be able to get the house or whatever, how that would be affected.
Yeah, you've identified one of the cons of a reverse mortgage, Don, and that is that I actually think they're a very good deal for the right people in the right situation. However, one of the downsides is, and there are few, but one of the downsides is that you cannot pass the house on to the individual. What happens is when you take out a reverse mortgage, you generally get either a lump sum or a steady monthly payment or a home equity line of credit against the accumulated equity in your home. It's tax-free, and you have to be over 62, and you have to be the homeowner, and you have to have equity in the home, obviously, to get that. You never have to pay that money back. What happens is when you've either vacated the house for 12 months or passed away, or hopefully both, you don't want to feel like you're still in the house after you've died. That would be a sad situation. But what happens is the lender then sells the home, and whatever net proceeds are left over and above the amount owed from the reverse mortgage, that goes to your estate. Now, the family member can actually, you know, put in a bid to buy the home, but it's very difficult to get a reverse mortgage and then still have the home passed directly to the family member. It's a great way for people who are over the age of 62, have some equity in their home, but don't have a bunch of other savings to stay in their home and still have money to live on. All you have to do is pay the property taxes and pay the maintenance and upkeep. And again, even if, you know, let's say you took out a reverse mortgage for $100,000 and the home was sold for $50,000, you pay a pretty big chunk in fees to get that started, and there is some government subsidy, but your family does not have to make up the difference after you're gone. So it's a good deal from that way, but again, one of the downsides other than the fees is that it's very difficult to make sure the family member gets the house and you get the money from it.
Okay. Thank you kindly.
Thank you, Don, for calling. Allison in Racine is with us now. Hello, Allison.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm actually calling for my mom, who was recently in to see an attorney and do some estate planning. And the attorney advised her to set up a revocable trust. And his reasoning was that then things don't get caught up in probate court. And she was just wondering if this is a good way to go, or if, like, her retirement accounts, such as a 401k and things like that, will just be, you know, accessible to whoever she wants to leave those to without this revocable trust.
Mm-hmm. It's not a bad idea at all, and it is... You know, some people accuse attorneys of saying, well, the only reason he or she suggested to do this is because they wanted to make some money. Well, they want to make money. That's, you know, one of the reasons they're offering the services. But there's an old axiom that says you can either pay a lawyer a little now or a lot later. And setting up a revocable trust now, I think, falls into that. It does, you know, cost a $1,000 or $2,000 in very complex cases to get this all set up. And then you do have to go back and a lot of times retitle many of your accounts in the name of the revocable trust. But it does provide a more efficient transfer of assets from the individual to whomever he or she would want to get the money. The retirement accounts are not as big of a deal because retirement account beneficiaries supersede most estate planning and will documents. So whomever your mother would want to get the money in the retirement accounts, she can just put that person's name on as the beneficiary. And when she passes away, that person will usually get the money according to her direction. Again, usually skipping probate for it. But probate, it can be expensive, but it's just a drag for time and hassle. I mean, it just takes months and months and months if you haven't made any preparation in advance. And of course, the longer it takes, the higher the legal expenses are going to be. So I'm not averse to this idea. There's a little bit of complexity to it, but not as much as setting up, say, an irrevocable trust.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Allison. Good luck to you and your mom. Susan in Madison is with us now. Hi, Susan.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. We bought one of these cookie-cutter condos in 2003, and since then actually refinanced it once. Took out a second mortgage. And have been trying to sell it. We do not live in the property for the past year in a short sale for less than 50% of what we owe on it, and it's just not moving. So currently we are flushing away about $20,000 a year that we will never, ever see again, and we are considering walking away from the property, knowing that we'll take a hit to the credit. But at the same time, that money, we could be completely debt-free within about a year and a half, and within the balance of that 7 years, have saved up $50,000 in cash.
Mm-hmm.
So we're wondering, like, what are the implications to doing something like that?
Well, it's actually a strategy, and one of the interesting components of all the housing mess is that what a moral implication many of us have about paying off debt or paying off a mortgage, when in actuality many, you know, millionaire and billionaire business people and government officials and do this kind of all the time, where they basically say, look, we can't make this payment, or we just don't want to make this payment. We're going to walk away from this. And unless we can negotiate the terms to more favorable terms. And it just involves you understanding and accepting the consequences in return for being able to save some money. Two concerns that I have about this. The first one is it's going to be a long, long time, my guess, unless the atmosphere changes, after walking away from this, that you're going to be able to get a new mortgage. So you have to be comfortable with that. The second thing about it is that you have to be very careful, and I would definitely contact an attorney for this, because there's an issue in many states about recourse, meaning even if you walk away from a mortgage, many people are under the understanding that you just walk away and you don't own the house anymore, and yeah, you get a really bad credit rating. And but you don't have those big payments. And there are cases now where the lenders are starting to say, you know what, we actually want that money from you. So if you have any other assets, we're going to try to get that back to repay what you owe us. So I would definitely contact an attorney and make sure that that you understand not only your rights as a homeowner and as a borrower, but also what your obligations are now and what they may be in the future, because I'd hate to have that hanging over your head if you do decide to go through with this.
Yeah, I'm so sorry, Susan, and good luck to you. That makes me kind of sad. Now, Kevin, though, you have a website of the week that's going to make me kind of glad, I think.
If you want to both shop as locally as you possibly can, but also have the convenience online, go to saverwisconsin.com. There are 1,105 providers, products there, 1,900 businesses, including about 360 something special from Wisconsin items that you can order, and either for yourself or give as a gift to send to to a loved one. SaverWisconsin.com, and we'll have a link up to that website at our website, OnYourMoney.com, later on today.
And a reminder of what we can expect on our Bell Ringer edition of On Your Money next week.
We're not asking for a lot. We're just asking a token gift. Again, I'm a very small man, as you can tell by listening to the show. I have a very low self-esteem. So anything that you can give is a significant amount, $5, $10, whatever, just as a show of support for the show. And again, it may make it more likely that we take your question down the road.
And we will talk to you next week. Kevin, four more words before we go.
Spend less, have more.
Kevin McKinley is a certified financial planner, managing member of McKinley Money LLC. And he will be with us next week, Tuesday, from 8 until 9 for the Bell Ringer edition of On Your Money, a one-day pledge drive coming up next Tuesday. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.